Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the presentation. As always, I start with some debt-related news and facts for the week. Toyota is suspending production at all 12 of its Japan plants for 11 days over February and March as it grapples with shrinking global demand. And this is a common thing now for all of the worldwide automobile makers. Macy's is closing 11 stores in 9 states. They have multiple stores in several states and are trying to cut costs. 2 in Colorado, 2 in Pennsylvania, and many in LA. So they're basically shutting down these stores just to deal with the shrinking economy and retail purchases. In a positive note from the Huffington Post, the IRS offers to waive late fees, negotiate new payments for taxpayers snared by the recession. From Washington, as the nation sinks deeper into recession, the IRS is offering to waive late penalties, negotiate new payment plans, and postpone asset seizures for delinquent taxpayers who are financially strapped but make a good faith effort to settle their tax debts. IRS Commissioner Doug Shulman said last week that tax agents are being given new authority to work with victims of the nation's economic woes who are struggling to pay their bills. Quote, "We need to recognize that it's an extraordinary, challenging time. We need to understand the taxpayer's perspective. We need to walk a mile in their shoes," Shulman said in an interview. "It's unrealistic to expect some taxpayers to make timely payments in this economy." However, he cautioned that those seeking help will have to demonstrate their inability to pay. Those who fail to file tax returns or who simply ignore collection notices will not be eligible for help, he said. Shulman continued that the most important thing for people to do is to get on the phone or walk into an IRS office. The worst thing someone can do is go dark and not be in a discussion with us. Just last month, the agency announced a program making it easier for homeowners with an IRS lien on their property to refinance their mortgages or sell their homes. With the filing season for the 2008 tax returns opening this week, the IRS expects to process 250 million returns over the next few months, including 130 million from individuals. The new leniency program is geared toward people who have paid their taxes in the past, but who are now facing a financial hardship. Shulman said, "This is not a free ride for people who can actually pay their taxes." The IRS doesn't know how many taxpayers might take advantage of the new program for stretching out payments on overdue taxes or even reducing their tax liability, but millions could be eligible. In the fiscal year ending last September 30th, the IRS took enforcement action against more than 3 million taxpayers. The actions included property liens and asset seizures, including homes, cars, bank accounts, and garnishing wages. This year, even more taxpayers could fall behind in their tax payments as the economy continues to sour. Record numbers of homeowners are falling behind on mortgage payments, and the U.S. economy is losing jobs at an alarming rate. Since the start of the recession last December, The economy has shed 1.9 million jobs, and the number of unemployed people has increased by 2.7 million to 10.3 million now out of work. The leniency program is an extraordinary step by the IRS, said Ellis Reamer, head of tax litigation at the law firm DLA Piper. IRS agents, he said, are generally well-meaning public servants who want to work with taxpayers, but are often bound by policies that limit their discretion. Reamer said, "This is not a normal course of events. This is an institutional determination that we are in very difficult economic times." The program was described as the, quote, "give the tax man a hard plan," end quote, said Steve Ellis, vice president of Taxpayers for Common Sense, a budget watchdog group. Ellis said the program makes sense given the state of the economy, but he cautioned that it should be monitored for consistency and fairness. He said, "You don't want people to get off the hook and not pay their fair share. They need to make sure that it's consistent. The IRS is doing the same thing many private creditors are doing." She said the mortgage crisis, Wall Street meltdown, and job losses have left many families unable to pay their bills, according to Sharon Price, policy director of the National Housing Conference. "The important point is that many taxpayers need to know that they have access to the benefits." Quote, "The problem is, will it be consistent and how will people find out about it?" said Price. To help explain the leniency program, the IRS has posted answers to common taxpayer questions on its website. The device under "What if I can't pay my taxes?" begins with some reassuring words. Don't panic. You can go to www.irs.gov. And from Reuters, U.S. companies face $409 billion pension deficit. Volatile markets have saddled U.S. companies with a $409 billion deficit on pension plans, reversing a $60 billion surplus a year earlier, and will cut into earnings in 2009, consulting firm Mercer said. As of December 31st, pension plans among members of the Standard & Poor's 1500 had $1.21 trillion of assets and $1.62 trillion of liabilities, Mercer said in a report released last week. At the end of 2007, pension plan assets totaled $1.66 trillion and liabilities totaled about $1.6 trillion, Mercer said. The S&P 1500 is a broad portfolio representing large-cap, mid-cap, and small-cap segments of the U.S. equity markets. The shortfall suggests that more companies will have to pump cash into their pension plans to ensure they can meet their commitments to retirees. Mercer estimated pension expenses will increase to about $70 billion this year from $10 billion in 2008, reducing overall profitability by about 8%. The decline in funded status will be capitalized and reflected in corporate balance sheets for many companies, said Adrian Hartshorn, a member of Mercer's financial strategy group. He said this will reduce balance sheet strength and could affect companies' ability to make capital expenses, meet loan covenants, and preserve their credit ratings. As a footnote, Mercer is a unit of the New York-based Marsh & McLennan Companies, Inc., which also runs a large insurance brokerage. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, for the second part of our show, we'll be looking at what we discussed last week, recapping that a little bit, and discussing some new principles that will be added today. As I always do in this segment, I want to give an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. You should also visit the www.kruufm.com archives. So go there and look at the life in debt section, and you can listen to previous shows upon which almost every show is built to get a full understanding of the program that we're trying to set out for people here to help get out of debt and to build some financial strength currently and in the future. In the last couple of weeks, I've been talking a lot about savings, and last week what I wanted to discuss in review is that there are psychological issues that people have to deal with in coping with their savings. By following all of my shows and hopefully reading Professor Warren's books, All Your Worth in particular, you have some very important knowledge and tools to create your debt-free situation and some wealth on the other side of it. And you're building your savings month after month, but you can also trap or sabotage your savings plan just from psychological hardships that people carry with them. They often think, I can't afford to save. And so I responded to that by saying, of course, that is a psychological barrier, and you have to recognize that if you've been doing this program, you have enough bare necessities, wants, and savings, and so you really can, from having balanced your financial life, save. Then you may say to yourself, I'll never save enough. Again, that's a mental trap, a negative thing to think. And with that, you really have to recognize, like all progress in life is one step at a time. Wealth is built $1 at a time. You just need to start saving piece by piece. Another negative trap that people often have is figuring out a way to invest your savings. People think it's really hard. There's so many books out there. There's so many professionals out there. And even now in the news, a lot of those people are losing money anyway. And what we have told you is that all you really need is an index fund, which is a stock market fund. You can go back to previous shows to understand that. But it's a diversified fund of stocks. It's for long-term savings. And it doesn't matter if the stock market's going up or down over time. Historically, there is substantial proof that you will continue to make earnings even if companies are going bankrupt and new companies are popping up. It really won't matter. The index fund will give you 10 to 12% over long periods of time. So you have to think that. Another thing you could possibly think negatively is, I had a setback and I'll never get caught up. This concept of setbacks is obviously something that's hard to cope with. There's a deep ingrained scar that they cause in our minds and in our nervous system somehow, even our bodies. But setbacks do happen, and it really is something you have to put behind you. It's time to push forward on making a brighter future for yourself, not just holding on to what happened in the past. You maybe learned from that, but I hope what we've been discussing in this show can get you over the problems that you had so you can put it all behind you and start with the formula to build a proper present situation, and then from that's the foundation for a great future. Another thing that people think in their savings area is, like I just mentioned, that the market went down and erased all my hard work if you've invested before and you've seen other people that happen to, etc., etc. Now, that's often people who are thinking in terms of short-term investing. That can and does happen if you're running after the roller coaster market ride. But the truth is that in time the market will go up again, and you are in this for the long term. So you overcome that negative thinking trap with the reality of facts, and those facts should win out over that emotional, intellectual, negative thinking baggage. And then another point is, I'll start saving next month when my expenses will be a little lower. But again, putting off things is not the way to progress. You just do it. You start now, today. You want to begin your future, but you begin it immediately. You don't keep on putting it off and putting it off, because there will always be a built-up habitual excuse not to get started. And then the thinking trap of telling yourself that you're just not ready, or that if you can't save the full 20% in our formula, then there's no point in saving. That is really fallacious thinking. You just start saving. Do it, and as I said, you want to do it immediately, even if you don't have the 20%. Good intentions won't get you there. That it really is action that gets you to the goal. And you have to start saving something, which is always better than saving nothing, even if you're not at full blast level with the 20% that is the ideal in our savings formula. So do that, and do that immediately. Also, last week I discussed the concept of looking into the future, and yet I think if a person has gone through this course, has read All Your Worth, and has applied the principles that are laid out here, then you really are someone who is unique in our American society and perhaps global society. It isn't necessarily easy to get all of these parts of the formula in place, meeting your bare necessities, meeting your wants. That's 50% bare necessities, 30% wants, and 20% savings, having paid off all of your debt, so you're not burdened with that anymore. You had to make some tough choices. We gave you examples and illustrations, ways to figure out how to balance that kind of situation for yourself to be 100% in the formula. And when we look at the statistics, what we see is that you're really, at this point, if you've done what has been asked of you and applied it, you are moving past really 63% of the credit card carrying Americans who are lugging around a balance. Because if you've done this, or you're working on doing it, obviously, for most of us, then you are moving way ahead of those people who are not only in credit card debt, but are continuing to just let it languish their lives and not dealing with it directly and completely and competently. And then if you're at the point where you really are in the fourth stage of savings, where you are doing everything that has been asked, then you are really above the 50% of Americans who have to worry about their bills. You're also doing better than 48% of Americans who have not saved one single dollar for retirement, because we've done all of this planning and you've gotten there. If you've actually gotten to the point of accomplishing the goals in the formula, and you're in the best possible position to take care of yourself and your loved ones, that you can really be healthier, less stressed, you can sleep better, you can be moving towards a life of security and comfort, and with that less worry, that's a higher quality of life, and that's what you're trying to accomplish. Debt can be a really unbelievably overwhelming, stressful, life-sucking situation, and you want to have a qualitative life, because the debt will have an impact on not just your financial relationships, but then it'll have an impact on all relationships because of the stress that you're carrying around with you. And that includes your loved ones. And that's going to be what we're going to talk about today, more about your partnership relationship. And by that, I essentially mean your mate. And we'll get into that in a moment. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So let's jump into love and money, basically, and really having both sides of this equation. One is very material, one is very universal, although nowadays money seems to be universal and love seems to be very material in the pornography industry, for example, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the concept of really having a relationship that is full of love and healthy, regardless of the money issues that one is moving through. And so you have a mate. Most of us have some kind of relationship like that, or many of us, I should say, have that kind of relationship. And that's really what we want to talk about here, is dealing with people who are in a relationship, whether it's a marriage, a mate, some kind of partnership there, and you're committed to each other in an emotional sense. And yet, for the married people, you took on your life in vows, most of us, for richer or for poorer. And yet, you're sharing the same home, you're sharing the same expenses, and you're sharing the same debts. And all of those have an impact on your relationship. You both have to fix the money problems together. That at least has been the standard thinking, that we got to work on this together. And that really is your basic standard advice. I was trained as a psychologist besides an attorney, and I was an educator for years. And this is very kind of standard advice. You must be in agreement on all your financial decisions and many, many decisions. Well, that sounds perfect and it sounds ideal, but it may be that even though you love your mate tremendously, you're not in perfect agreement on money. That raises the issue, well, what if you're not? What if you're a normal couple with normal disagreements and you're not living an ideal financial situation? You disagree about money sometimes, and even though you get along great most of the time, there are conflicts about money. And as an attorney in bankruptcy, I know that there are a lot of divorces that go hand in hand with the plummeting of a person's financial life. And it's a horrible thing to watch when we see this happening, that the divorce rates go up tremendously. And so where is the love? And yet those relationships are often based on very, very good and prominent, helpful, really progressive, evolutionary, compatible traits. And yet people just get so overwhelmed with the debt issues that it overshadows and destroys the rest of the relationship. So most of the financial experts aren't going to offer much help when it comes to counseling. They'll say go to a marriage counselor, go to a psychologist, go to the LISW, the social worker, and good luck. Basically, that's what you'll hear. Well, both Professor Warren and her daughter, and also myself, we are very much in tune with the reality that there is the current truth that couples do disagree over money, and that does not have to be the end of their relationship. We do wrangle about money, and because money is about choices, and there's hundreds if not thousands of choices that we make every day, even with people that we love, and we're very much bound to disagree on some of those choices. And so there is a conflictual side to the relationship because of money. And yet, we need to focus on that without it being devastating, without it overwhelming us and destroying our relationship. So here you are in the midst of this program that I've been doing. I think this is the 38th week of doing this program on trying to balance your money. And you may have picked up all your worth, read it from cover to cover, and started applying all of the principles. And you're making a lot of new choices in your financial life, which is great. And if you really have the savvy and the determination to accomplish what this program sets out to do, you will see success. But even with those plenty of new opportunities, while you're making changes, well, change is what causes conflict in many relationships. And that's part of the growth step. that there has to be change. You have to make change from where you were. Even in that stagnant state, people learn to cope. And just by being there, languishing in that stagnant state, they cope and they don't want to see change. And now here with the program, with the life and debt kind of program, you are making very, very profound changes. So those choices that you're making to do something better in dealing with money in your life can have an impact on your relationship. But it can also really improve your money partnership. And there are ways to do that. It's not like you're both going to think the same every single day about every single kind of money decision. On the other hand, this is about compromises that work for both of you, just like they do for the rest of your life and your relationship with this one person or with your family or with everyone. So you can take steps to improve your money relationship right here, right now. And you can do that even if you don't have screaming fights over money, out of balance spending and worry over money, because that can drive a wedge between you and your partner, adding anxiety. So there is room to improve, and all you have to do is make sure that you don't drive that wedge, that you want to work out a lifetime money plan and recognize that it's going to pay big time dividends for you. Knowing money is in the balance, you have a chance here to put your relationship on a much stronger footing. If you can get better on money, you can get better with each other. Well, it's not like we're promising perfection. In truth, what we're promising is, again, small steps of progress, and these steps can help you to make giant leaps over time. And just for an overview, there'll be three major points. One is that change what you can. That's the first point. The second point will be that you're not allowed to nag. That's the second point. And the third point is when you're discussing money situations, you have to stick to the subject. And these are very important principles, and I'll go next week into more detail about all those principles. But what you need to do is just recognize is that you need one improvement, and that is whenever your relationship is getting on the money path, making it straight, which is probably a long way to go towards making the money situation better, then that can be a very, very strong way to make your relationship better. All you need to do is agree on a basic plan that you can live with, which will take a lot of pressure off your relationship. It's really important that when you have some financial peace and you recognize this, you can focus on things in your life that really matter, including that relationship. So just being on the straight money path that I've been discussing for so long, you can have a better relationship. And as I said, it doesn't even matter at the onset that your partner is saying, I don't want to change at all. Well, as I mentioned, if in fact you can work on change yourself, change what you can, that you don't nag, and then you set up a principle of kind of not allowing nagging to happen towards you, and then you stick to the subject when these money topics come up, then you will see a huge amount of success. So tune in next week, and I will go into a much greater detail on those three points, those principles. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083. Or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.